Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Neil Sabourin from the Calgary Progressive Lifestyles Foundation. Tell me a little bit about the Progressive Lifestyles Foundation.
Well, the Calgary Progressive Lifestyles Foundation is a family-run business founded by my mother, actually, Adrienne Sabourin, in 1989. She currently is our CEO, and I am the Chief Operations Officer here at the Calgary Progressive Lifestyles Foundation. We provide support services for seniors and people with disabilities, at work, at home, and in the community. And we provide supports to the entire gamut of disabilities. That includes physical, cognitive, and behavioral supports.
So what type of support services are most commonly used in this work?
Well, all three of them. So the employment supports, where we try to find our clients' jobs or volunteer opportunities, as employment helps add self-empowerment and dignity and autonomy and job skill development and socialization. And then we're out in the community trying to access the resources that our community offers. If someone is looking for a healthy lifestyle, then we would provide support in with getting into a gymnasium or library or whatever their goals are, and then residential supports. And these are most fundamental. We work with the entire age bracket, and so as parents pass away, it's important that they have an agency to provide that those supports while they're gone. And so residential supports become much needed.
So are there any challenges in providing these supports?
Absolutely. With disabilities, you're working with people, and people have personalities, and so it's not just skill sets that we're looking for, but we're looking for personality. We're looking for the support worker and the client to actually get along together. So personality conflicts are a concern. Proximity in the city. Certain clients want to live in certain areas of the city, close to city transit or schools, or close to their parents or friends. So these all become challenges. And then we even have other challenges where clients may want to be with a certain sex or religion. So these are all considerations. We're much like a matchmaking service, you might say.
So how do you go about spreading the word about the work you do?
We do that through word of mouth. We have over 350 clients, and we've done that just through referrals. The vast majority of our funding comes directly from the Alberta government. And with our relationships with the Alberta government, we've been able to provide those supports that are needed here in Alberta.
So, in your time with the foundation, what's been the greatest success that you've witnessed?
I've been with the foundation for 15 years, and in that time, we've grown from 20 clients to now 350 clients, and we've also been able to, this is a story, one of my mother's first clients had rather challenging disabilities, challenging to engage her, and she thought, well, let's bake some cookies in the kitchen and try and sell these cookies. And they did that on a weekly basis, and she found that the client was actually doing her hair and getting motivated to get up and really enjoyed baking cookies. So today, we've expanded it, and we have now two social enterprises, one called Lifestyles Bistro and the other social enterprise called Cookies on the Go. And together, these two social enterprises gainfully employ some 20 individuals with disabilities. So I think that's been the greatest, what was that word you were saying? The greatest
success
that I've seen here at CTLF. Yeah.
So how does the community typically respond to the social enterprises?
That's been a journey. I thought that, you know, if we told the community that we had a brand muffin where proceeds support people with disabilities, that we'd be selling brand muffins out the door. But I've come to learn that we need to win their business. We need to have the best brand muffin and really communicate to the general public that this excellent brand muffin helps frame yourself as a community builder, and therefore you begin to win friends and allies in the community. And so it's been a marketing challenge as well as a product challenge. We have to have the best product and the best service if we're going to win business.
So what are the next steps going forward?
The next steps going forward, we need to improve our marketing. That's been a challenge because, like I said, our core service has been our relationships with the government of Alberta, which is based on a referral. And in the retail sector, that requires a whole other skill set where marketing is really, really much needed. So I think marketing and how we communicate to the public, because we are such a unique program, that we really need to communicate that messaging.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Mary Hoffman from the Coffin Lowry Foundation. So tell me a little bit about the Coffin Lowry Foundation.
The Coffin-Lowry Syndrome Foundation was founded, about 30 years ago now, when my son was diagnosed. He was born in 1997, and it took about 18 months to get a diagnosis and multiple geneticists reviewed. And when we finally figured out what it was that he had, I went looking for information, and I could find very little. I contacted the National Organization for Rare Disorders. I figured they would have maybe a dozen families. They had one, and I contacted them. And so we started our own little mini support group. And after a few months, there were five or six of us, and I thought, somebody should start a support group for this. And then I thought, well, I'm somebody. And so I started sending out letters to every genetic organization I could think of or place that people might be going for information, and set up the foundation. We became a nonprofit some years later, and now we service a worldwide community, small though it is, because this is a relatively rare condition. But we have between 300 and 400 member families at any given time. And our main purpose is just to provide support for each other, of course, but we also try to get involved in research when we can, and we respond to people who are looking for information about Coffin-Lowry, consult with medical professionals, etc.
So, how exactly does the syndrome affect a person?
Coffin-Lowry syndrome is a defect in a gene that controls how connective tissue is developed, and it also controls growth at the cellular level. So it affects pretty much all systems of the body in one way or another. It the symptoms and characteristics that are noticeable in infancy are three major ones. The fact that the eyes are wide apart and downward slanting, as opposed to upward slanting in Down syndrome. The fingers are tapered, and there is some distal tufting that is visible only on X-ray. And the bone age lags behind the chronological age. So if the facial features are not there and the tapered fingers are not there, I mean, all these things have to be together for a diagnosis of Coffin-Lowry to be suspected. There are other syndromes that have tapered fingers. There are other syndromes that have wide-set eyes. So you're looking for a set of characteristics that go together that match this particular syndrome. As the child grows, there are a number of different things that could be affected. Some children have issues with hearing impairment. That's a minority. Some have cardiac involvement. Again, that's a minority. Most have cognition issues to some degree, males worse than females. The stature is generally short. They have the characteristic facial features. Scoliosis is relatively common as opposed to the general population. So there's a number of different things that could be affected. The reason for this variability is that at last count, I believe there was close to 100 separate mutations that can result in a diagnosis of Coffin-Lowry syndrome. So there is quite a bit of variability even within the condition itself.
So are there any effective treatments currently available?
You can't cure Coffin-Lowry any more than you can cure Down syndrome. What you do is you treat the various characteristics or problems that arise with it. So if the child has a cardiac involvement, you take them to a cardiologist and you work with them. If they have scoliosis, you go to an orthopedic surgeon. So you're treating the symptoms, not the condition itself.
So
there has been some research done in the line of gene therapy, but that's still a long ways off.
So in your time with the foundation, has there been any success that you've achieved that stands out for you?
I believe the one big one that stands out for me is during the course of this time, the genetic defect that causes Coffin-Lowry was discovered. I worked with some researchers in France who were pinning it down. And I also worked with some other researchers who were working on another characteristic that shows up with Coffin-Lowry, but not in all cases. We call them stimulus-induced drop episodes. They apparently are unique to Coffin-Lowry syndrome, so there's been a fair amount of research on them, but we still don't know the cause of them. But at least we have identified them as a separate characteristic and not one of the other movement disorders that we originally thought they might have been.
So if you could send any message to the community about this condition and why the research needs to continue, what would you say?
Anything that we can do that would improve the quality of life for these individuals would make a huge difference. The stimulus-induced drop episodes, or SIDS for short, is a perfect example. If we could find an effective treatment for that, because right now there is no one treatment that works for everyone, that could improve the quality of life for these individuals quite a bit. What happens is they have these drop episodes that are sometimes associated with an external stimuli. So say, for example, they feel anxious, they see somebody running towards them, and they have this drop episode because they think they're going to get hit or knocked down. And it can also be you walk up behind them and put your hand on a shoulder, and they might have a drop episode because they didn't hear you coming and they were startled. After a while, this gets bad enough where they don't want to stand up anymore, because when they stand up, they fall down and they get hurt. And so these kids usually end up eventually in a wheelchair for their own safety, if nothing else. And then, of course, as long as they're in the wheelchair, they start to lose the ability to walk entirely. So if we could control those drop episodes, that would make, I think, a huge difference for these kids.
So what are the next steps for the foundation?
We're continuing on the path that we are, trying to get the word out as much as we can, provide support for the families. We find that in the case of our parent support group, that most of us know more about the condition than most of the medical professionals that we go to. And so we are a great source of information for each other. We exchange tips and tricks and things that we've dealt with, and it helps so much to know that you're not alone. And I think that having a child with a rare condition like this can be very isolating.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Of course.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
UWindsor Campus Police remind you to always be aware of building safety and security to help prevent theft and break-ins. Always keep track of your belongings and never leave them unattended, even for a minute. You should report suspicious behavior immediately to Campus Police at 519-253-3000, extension 1234. Examples include a stranger going from office to office, a person loitering for a long period of time, or somebody waiting outside of offices near closing time. Always stay aware of building safety and security on campus. UWindsor Campus Police is here to help you.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Neil Sabourin from the Progressive Lifestyles Foundation and Mary Hoffman from the Coffin Lowry Foundation. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Chantelle Helou from the University of Windsor, will be telling us a little bit about mental health services. So what can you tell me about some of the mental health services here at the U?
So since like about last year, the mental health services have only just been getting bigger and bigger, and more people are knowing about the mental health services that we have on campus. We have student counseling services, and students can go there for counseling, and it's even specific too for faculty. So if you're in engineering, you don't have to come all the way to like the CAW to receive counseling. You can go to the engineering building and receive counseling there. There's also mental health and wellness, more known as just wellness, at UWindsor. And that holds like a lot of events across campus, promoting like mental health, talking about what it is, letting people know that it's okay to like talk about it. It's okay to like feel alone, because like a whole bunch of us are feeling alone, so it's okay to all get together and like talk about it and receive the help, because it is out there. There's something even called TAO, which is like an online service too.
That's still a Rick Springfield album, as I said to Ashley.
Yeah, so there's just like a whole bunch of services on campus, and everything that I did just mention is free and confidential too. So if you have like more questions, it's in the CUW on the second floor.
So how does the student base and the community as a whole respond to knowing that these needs can be met, that there are services available?
From what I've seen so far and like who I've talked to when I'm volunteering at like the mental health events, the students are actually just very excited that this is on campus. A lot of students didn't even know that this exists. They're just like passing by and they see the event and they ask like, oh, what is this? And we let them know and they're like, oh, this is great. And like they take pictures of stuff and they like promote it too, which is awesome, because there's such a stigma around mental health and like people don't like to talk about it. But I think we need to talk about it in order to get rid of the stigma and everyone just to be like a member of society, like equally, and not have to be feeling like they have something to hide.
So when it comes to the stigmas and the myths, which, in my personal opinion, just as a layman, are completely outdated.
Yes, definitely.
How does your work go about getting through all that, really clearing up the idea that this is something that a person has to be ashamed of?
I feel like just talking through it, and honestly, like, it's an invisible, like, thing. Like, you can be talking to me right now, and I could have a whole bunch of, like, mental illnesses, like depression and anxiety, and you wouldn't know it. So I just feel like people judge people without even knowing anything about them. Or, like, you could have, like, your best friend who has depression, like, their whole life and not talk about it. And it's just, like, So it doesn't matter if someone has a mental illness or not. They're still a person. I feel like we just need to treat everyone as a person. And I hope like that's what people get from just talking about it. And they'll just see that they're just like anyone else.
It's one factor in a person's complete makeup. You can't go by any one thing about a person.
Yeah, for sure. Like, just one thing is not all you are.
So, in your time with the office, what's been the greatest success you've seen?
The greatest success I've seen is just the outcome at, like, events. The turnover is just wonderful, and it makes me really happy to see that people are wanting to, like, volunteer or just get involved, like, attend the events, and it just makes me happy that people are talking about it now. Like, 5 years ago, this was, like, not a thing you could talk about, so I'm just really happy that it's out there.
So, what do you foresee for the future of the work? Do you see it getting more and more comprehensive to meet the students' needs?
Oh, yes, actually, I really hope it does, and, like, this is just kind of, like, I think it's been running just for, like, over a year now, Wellness at U Windsor. So, I was just actually talking with Ashley, the coordinator there, and we're just in the midst of, like, developing even more. So it's still new, and we're trying things out. We're asking questions how we could do better. So we're only trying to improve. We're only trying to meet students' needs. So it's only going to get better.
So what are the next steps going forward?
So next steps going forward, like, we're doing a focus group actually coming up soon. So we're going to be asking questions like, how could we improve the services and the events at U Windsor? What would you like to see? How could we, like, do things better? How could we meet your needs?
Well, one suggestion I would make would be to get involved in the annual Accessibility Awareness Day.
Okay, yes, that is a great suggestion. Actually, I believe we did actually participate. I don't want to say 100%, but I believe we might have participated in that briefly.
Well, as a former speaker myself, I have a certain bias that says this is a great event. But,
if you could, for sure. I work in a student accessibility services. So I know how important accessibility is, and I feel like mental health and accessibility definitely do go hand to hand.
But the thing is, in physical accessibility, you can see the door physically closed. Mm-hmm. In mental health, you just feel like it's there, like there's all these barriers. You see them, those around you might not, but reaching out for help is essential. You can't just live ruled by the fear of what might be.
For sure, and it's actually like a sad fact that I feel like I believe like 1 in 5 will experience like a mental illness in their life, but only like 90% of people will go seek help for depression or something. So it's just like it's really sad. But if you go to therapy or you go seek some help or just do some things to care for yourself, like self-care, like you can get better. Like you won't be like feeling this way forever. Like you can get back to a normal routine. Like even though it feels really down right now, but there is still hope and. Just reach out to someone. And
so if you could send any message to the community about why mental health should be treated just as part of the whole picture, just as any other condition, what would you say?
These services matter to the students just because, like for myself personally, like I have had depression, anxiety, like PTSD, and if I didn't seek the help, I honestly, like, I don't know where it'd be, and I just hate to find out that there's, like, someone out there who's struggling and who can get the help and can go back to their life, and they're not doing that. It was just, I don't know, it's just, like, kind of would just break my heart. You don't just have to go to therapy. There's just so many other things that you can do, just even researching something, like if you don't want to go in person somewhere. And just finding resources because, like, it has such an impact on your life. Like, you don't want to go to work. You don't even want to shower. You don't want to hang out with friends. And it just has an effect on your whole life. Like, you don't want to eat. It becomes, like, your whole life, and it can just, like, consume you. So I feel like getting that help, you can break out of that down shell and just be yourself again.
That's the thing, though. When someone finds an answer for themselves, that's great. But knowing that somebody else doesn't necessarily have the same resources, you have to reach out.
Sure.
Disability life is all about seeing what you can do for the community, not just saying, I have a solution, ain't I great? It's more about getting the word out, reaching the broader base. I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you, Cam, so much for having me.
How is it, my friends, that we call ourselves an enlightened people, and yet we still have this segment of the population we can so easily overlook? Those affected with mental illness, mental health concerns, are no less entitled to any help than anyone else. Fact is, it's easy to say we don't want to look upon this because we're not comfortable with it or because we don't understand it, we can't readily quantify it. But if you want to live in ignorance, go out, make a time machine, go back a couple hundred years. Such myths and perceptions have no place in an enlightened society. We can't look at someone begging in the streets because they've lost their eyesight and not have some semblance of compassion for them. But how is it that we can look at others and say, they think a little differently, so, we're not going to help them? Then you end up just building what I call the impossible standard, my friends. Finding reason after reason not to help someone. Oh, can't include you, your eyes are that color. Oh, can't include you, you move that way. Eventually, you do build a wall, even you don't get over. And no matter how rare or how unknown a condition may be, if it's affecting one person in this world, that one person is still entitled to our consideration, our respect, and our best efforts to give them the best quality of life we can. Truth is, disability has struck in every family. You go back far enough, whether it was understood at the time, whether it was something that the doctors of that era knew how to treat or not, it mattered. The lives of everyone with a disability matters. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HANDILINK, the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. You know, it's organizations like the Progressive Lifestyles Foundation featured in this episode. They're doing something really unique. They created a social enterprise just to give people with disabilities a business opportunity. Not out of pity or compassion, but a real chance to make their mark on society. And that's what it's all about. It's about being a part of it all, not hiding away because one thing makes you special. One thing can change the world. If you get the right someone with the right heart for what needs to be done, that's a pairing that can and will move mountains. They call it the Progressive Lifestyles Foundation, but I see progress in something of a different lens, my friends. I look at all the signs where it says blind person's crossing or accessible vehicle. There may come a day, and I hope there does, that these things are just the foregone conclusion, that we don't think of accessibility as an afterthought. We see it as everyone has the right to explore their own potential, their hopes, their dreams, and that we aren't putting up those systematic roadblocks, those things that, honestly, we should have just thought ahead rather than having to go to all the trouble to retrofit. I mean, if you have to redesign a building to make it accessible, that's a lot harder than taking the 5 seconds and saying, gee, what can we put in here? And you don't limit yourself to the legal requirement. You don't just say, this is good enough. It's a matter of upkeep as well. You keep an eye on things, make sure everything's working, and you try. You try to anticipate what a person could actually make use of. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.